on the road or off-road, Chevy Silverado is built for tough performance in any condition. Hit the road in a new Silverado pickup. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for a dealer near you. Chevy Silverado, official truck partner of the Chicago Bears.
They consider themselves warriors for Islam, rebuilders of the caliphate, an Islamic empire that spanned the Middle East and beyond for centuries. They fly the ancient banner of jihad and enforce a medieval version of Sunni Sharia, or religious law.
As we were moving down the road, a group of gunmen just literally jumped out of the trees and bushes on the side of the road. There were probably 15 gunmen. They were wearing ski masks. They were heavily armed. They dragged us out of the car. They had a container truck positioned waiting by the side of the road. They put us into that container truck. We were with some gunmen, some rebels who were escorting us. They executed one of them on the spot. Then they took us to a series of safe houses and interrogation places, and they kept us blindfolded, bound. We weren't physically beaten or tortured. It was a lot of psychological torture, threats of being killed. They made us choose which one of us would be shot first, and when we refused, there were mock shootings. They pretended to shoot Ghazi several times, and when you're blindfolded and then they fire the gun up in the air, it can be very a traumatic experience.
One thing the president said is that American leadership, including our military power, is stopping ISIL's advance. That just isn't the case, according to military officials I've been speaking to.
Stay player on 720 WGN. Based on two decades of reporting, Richard Engel, NBC's chief foreign correspondent, tells a riveting story of Middle East revolutions, the Arab Spring, war, and terrorism seen up close, sometimes dangerously so. Richard has been under fire, blown out of hotel beds, taken hostage. He has watched Mubarak and Egypt arrested and condemned, reported from Jerusalem, been through the Lebanese war, covered Iraq, interviewed Libyan rebels who toppled Gaddafi, reported from Syria as al-Qaeda stepped in, was kidnapped in the Syrian cross-currents of fighting, and he goes into Afghanistan with the Taliban and to Iraq to report on ISIS. Engel takes chances, though not reckless ones, keeps a level head and a sense of humor, as well as a grasp on history in the making. Richard Engel's new book is And Then All Hell Broke Loose, Two Decades in the Middle East, and he joins us this morning. Good morning to you, Richard.
Well, thank you very much. That was quite a preamble. I guess I'm pretty lucky to have made it through all of that.
Absolutely. You absolutely.
Good to talk to you.
I got to tell you, Richard, I was just saying to you before we chatted here that, honestly, I know when there's breaking news. I know that when there's breaking news in the Middle East, I know I can turn on the Today Show in the morning and count on you to be there and cover it firsthand. I just think you do amazing work.
Oh, it's really nice of you to say. And, you know, I've written two books before. This is the third book, but for some reason, this one seems to be getting more attention. It's doing pretty well. People seem to be enjoying it and finding it interesting. So I guess third one's a charm.
Well, I'll tell you, it's a very captivating book. It really covers all of your 20 years out there. And I want to start a little bit from the beginning. In 1996, you graduated from Stanford University, and that's right away you set out on your journey in the Middle East. What was the moment that you saw yourself as a foreign correspondent?
So about 20 years ago, 1996, as you said, I decided I wanted to be a foreign reporter. And I didn't know exactly what that meant. I just had this romantic notion that I'd be going to exotic places and writing dispatches, maybe on a typewriter, and staying in old dusty hotel rooms with ceiling fans. You know, that was the vision. And I looked at the map and I thought, okay, so where is that going to unfold for me? And it was 1996. So the Cold War was basically over. The Iron Curtain had come down. We were in a different kind of world than if we had been in, say, 1976 or 86, then I think my choices would have been different. But looking at the world in 1996, I thought, you know, in this new world order that we're facing, where the Cold War is over, the Middle East is going to emerge as a dominant story for my generation. It was a guess, but I thought as the old order had broken down and changed, that the religious conflicts, the ethnic conflicts, the sectarian divisions that have been long plagued in the Middle East, I thought they were going to become forefront in our generation. So I took a gamble and I moved out to Cairo and lived there and learned the language and spent about 7 years freelancing in Egypt and Jerusalem and other places. And then until suddenly the Iraq war begins, and then the predictions that I had been counting on suddenly became very, very true, because after 2003, well, really after 2001, we saw two American ground wars in the Islamic world that saw hundreds of thousands of troops rotate through. We saw the emergence of Al-Qaeda, later ISIS. We saw the collapse of the old status quo with revolution. So the Middle East turned out very much to be the story of our times.
Well, you talk about this in the book, that there was that status quo, dragged along. Leaders were brutal. So many conflicts, 8 years of military action by the Bush administration, then 8 years of inconsistent action from the Obama administration. That status quo was really destroyed. And now here we are living in this new world.
So after 20 years of riding this train of history, as I sometimes like to call it, I came up with a thesis. And this book has a basic thesis. And it is the following, that there was a status quo in the Middle East, and that status quo had existed for decades. It hadn't existed forever, but it existed at least since 1967, which is the last time that the map of the Middle East was torn up and redefined. And that status quo was one of big strongmen. They were the leaders, generally secular, often pro-American, that held their regimes together brutally. Saddam Hussein, Gaddafi, Ben Ali, the Assad family, and this was the structure that existed in the Middle East, Mubarak in Egypt. And that structure was flawed. It had a lot of corruption, had a lot of nepotism. It allowed deep-rooted conflicts to fester below the surface. People were undereducated. They were living on conspiracy theories, but the structure held. And then because of 8 years of military action, and then I think 8 years of inconsistent action almost 8 years of inconsistent action under the Obama administration, by which I mean supporting the rebels and the revolutionaries in Egypt, and not supporting them in Bahrain, and supporting them in Libya with military intervention, and then not supporting them in Syria, sort of zigzag policy. The combined effect of the interventions militarily under Bush, and then this zigzagging under the Obama administration, we broke that old system and unleashed problems that were contained and within, problems that were not of our making. The U.S. obviously didn't create the Sunni-Shia conflict, but tore the lid off of this Pandora's box. And now we're dealing with all of these really ancient and primordial and very dark tendencies that have come out of the Middle East.
Well, you talk about ISIS.
They're not going to last forever.
Right,
you know,
right.
ISIS being the representation of the sort of the ooze that has come out.
Now, sometimes I know it can be very difficult doing what you do. You talk in the book about the fact that just as New Yorkers hear sirens and they know they're in the Big Apple, when you hear car bombs go off, you know you're home, whether it's wherever it is in the Middle East.
That was I was writing about a specific time and place.
Yeah, Baghdad.
You know, luckily, the Middle East isn't always full of car bombs. But I was writing a specific time and place, and that was about Baghdad and how Baghdad. I lived in Baghdad for about 5 years. And stayed in most of it living in one hotel room. I mean, a couple of hotel rooms got blown up, but most of it was in a couple of hotel rooms. And it got to be almost prison-like, where I would go out of this, leave this hotel, which I said, often got a couple of times got damaged. Then I would go into this urban jungle where there were often car bombs, or I was coming to the aftermath of devastating attacks. There'd be blood on the floor. And then I would come home and write about it and do television stories. And then I would go back out the next day and do it again. And this was for 5 years. And you can imagine what that does to your view of the world. And sure. And I would sometimes sit in bed and I'd hear gunfire or I'd hear an explosion and or an incoming round. And sometimes I didn't even get out of bed.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
look.
Yeah. And you know, and this says something so much about you because you are so determined to be where the action is and to cover what is happening in the Middle East, in Iraq before 2003, the U.S. invasion. You had volunteered really to be a human shield for, you know, for Saddam Hussein in exchange for a visa into the country. You talk in great deal in this book about what happened back in 2012 when you and five crew members were held captive by armed gunmen. You know, you've been in some very harrowing experiences.
Yeah, it's, you know, you don't get, you know, cover these things. And if you get close to them, like getting close to a flame, you can feel the heat, if not get burned. And you know, going into Iraq, you mentioned that was as a human shield. That was a trick that, you know, sometimes right. we have to play right. little games, particularly with, you know, regimes that aren't friendly or don't give out visas. So I couldn't get a visa under Saddam's Iraq because of the systems that were in place. But they were giving out visas to people who would be willing to be human shields and volunteer to help the Saddam regime, which, of course, I had no intention of doing. But it was a way to get into the country. So I got this visa and they stamped, you know, human shield or friend of solidarity with Saddam movement. And I got into the country and then promptly, you know, went underground and disappeared and took a bunch of hotel rooms and was laying low until the war began. That was, looking back, it was, you know,
yeah.
I'm glad it worked out. It could have gone very differently. But there were times that, you know, I didn't know it was going to go differently. Imagine if you're in Baghdad with some sort of bogus visa and your country is about to invade and you don't really have many friends and you don't know who you can trust and you have a limited amount of funds. And you're there. What do you do? And I was faced with that problem, you know, all the time until the war actually began, and then the war, and then the regime had collapsed, and then there was a whole new setup. And then later on, you know, many years later, when we started covering Syria, I went in with a team, and generally I have the same team. You know, we stick together, and we have a lot of bonds. So generally, it's the same people I travel with. And this time, we went into Syria, and we'd been traveling around, and we got surrounded by gunmen. They pulled us off the road. They loaded us in the back of a truck and held us for 5 days and got out on the sixth day. And, you know, we thought we were going to die. They told us we were going to die.
Yeah.
And there were guns raised to us. And it was, you know, pretty, well, it was very unpleasant to face the fact, as I was in my mind, at least, that not only am I going to die in this experience, but there were times when I thought, I'm going to die right now.
Like, yeah.
My moment has come. You know, you're blindfolded. They line you up against a wall. You hear guns, rounds being chambered. You know, you think, okay, it's over now. And there were several days when, you know, I had that thought repeatedly. So luckily that ended well. We all got out safely and even made it home for Christmas. But wow. Other colleagues of mine haven't, in similar circumstances, haven't been so lucky. So,
has it ever made you?
You have to approach Syria really, really cautiously. And everywhere, frankly. I mean, lives of journalists right now to so many, you know, these militant groups really mean nothing. You know, there's no respect for what we do. We're just, you know, commodities.
Has it ever made you say to yourself, being in any of these situations, boy, do I really want to continue doing this, or did it make you hungrier to go out there and report?
Hungrier, no. Did I ever want to, you know, change what I did? Not really. I know this is what I like doing. I like traveling. I like being at places where history is in transition. That's what I want to do with my life, but I'd like to do it for a long time.
Yeah.
So when I thought my time was up in Syria and other places, it wasn't that, oh, gee, I wish I had chosen something else. I wish I had chosen to, you know, go to dental school or
right.
learn to kick a soccer ball. Or yeah. You know, I didn't have those moments. I was mostly annoyed. I was like, I'm just halfway down the road. I've got so much more road that I'd like to see. And these jerks are going to stop my trip right now. But I didn't regret having gotten into the car.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, when I watch you reporting, and sometimes, you know, when you're looking at the morning news or the evening news, we only have a few minutes with you. But I know there's so much more of a story that you are covering at that time. And it's really what stops me in my tracks. So, you know, I could watch that show or any of the news programs while I'm doing other things. Your reporting is so captivating that it's one of those moments that I stop and I watch while you're on the air.
Wow. Well, thank you. Hopefully you're not driving at the time. I appreciate that. That's if you're listening on the radio. But no, that's great. There's so much more to tell. You know, I have a prediction of where I think the Middle East is going. By the way, it's funny. I don't even just cover the Middle East. It's just that the fact that the Middle East for the last 15 years has been so dominant. You know, I go to Russia, I go to China too, but it's mostly been the Middle East. But
what are your predictions?
I have a theory of where I think the Middle East is going to go. So if you follow that model that we were talking about earlier, you had status quo, then you have destruction of the status quo, and then you have the unleashing of all these demons that were within. I think what we're going to see over the next 5 to 10 years are repeated attempts to reimpose a status quo. So a rise of strongmen once again, and it will be a tough slog, but so we'll end up with this kind of V-shaped model where you had a status quo and you descended into chaos. Well, the whole book is called "And Then All Hell Broke Loose."
Right.
That's what I'm talking about. So you have this place where you started from, then you descend into where an all hell broke loose, and then I think we're going to sort of bounce off the bottom and go to another place of a new status quo, a new series of dictators, which is not a great outcome, frankly.
No.
I mean, who wants to live under a dictatorship?
Now, I'm sure building a personal life can be challenging, you know, 20 years in the Middle East. I mean, you are on missions for
months. I'm married.
You are. New baby.
I've got a little boy.
Congratulations.
Yeah, new baby.
Yeah.
Thank you. But that's, it's been challenging. I'm also divorced.
Right, exactly. But, you know, what you do, I certainly revere what you do, and I thank you for doing what you do every day. And there's so many stories. Richard Engel's new book is "And Then All Hell Broke Loose, 2 Decades in the Middle East." You can buy it wherever books are sold. Richard, thank you again so much. I know your journey continues, and please be safe, my friend.
Well, thank you, and thanks for taking a few minutes to talk with me. I really appreciate it and enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you, sir. All right, we'll be right back on 720 WGN.